Hey, it's Stephanie Staples. Thanks for joining us on Your Life Unlimited, where we're always trying to bring you some ideas, some insights, some inspiration for better living. Coming up a little later in the show, I have Amanda Lindhout on the line, and she is the author of a book called A House in the Sky. And if you haven't checked that book out, it's definitely a very fascinating read, and we're going to tap into her brilliance a little bit later in the show. But first, I want to send a shout out to vivacityfitness.ca. They bring us the fit tip of the week, and that is have a salad every day. Load it up with as many veggies as possible, and you know that'll help you tick off the veggies for your day. So every day, make sure you throw a salad in there. It's an easy way to be a little bit healthier. So one of the reasons that I think that a lot of people don't kind of get to where they want to go in life and in the world is that we're kind of sitting around waiting. We're waiting for things to happen. We're waiting for someone else to do it for us. We're waiting for someone else to create something. We're waiting for the stars to line up. But I think that we could have a lot more success in business and in life and in community world if we take a little responsibility and a little effort and do things ourselves. And so that's kind of where this story is coming from. We were having a sporting events, you know, you kind of connect with the other parents at the sporting events that happens a lot of times for sure, right? It kind of becomes your social life. And one of the other moms and I, we always had a book in our bag and we would talk in the stands about the books we were reading and we'd have these really engaging, interesting dialogues. And one day we just said, well, you know, what would it be like if we had if we created a book club, and not just like a fiction book club, but an idea club, a club where we read nonfiction books and we talked about the ideas behind them and how we could maybe make the world a better place or make ourselves a better person. So we just kind of, you know, brainstormed about what that would look like. And what we decided to do was something a little bit different. We each invited a couple of people that we knew, a couple of people that we liked, but that we didn't really know that good. But we just thought, you know, sometimes you see people and you just kind of know that they're, you just want to get to know them a little bit better. And we asked them if they thought this was a good idea. And if they did, we asked them to invite someone else they knew who was kind of a cool person and might be interested in that idea club. So that's what we did. It was a few years ago now. And I ended up with 12 women in my living room, most of whom I didn't know. And it was such a neat experience. And from then, I don't think it's maybe been 4 years or so, but we've been meeting about every 6 or 8 weeks and we talk about nonfiction books. And the book that we're going to be talking about on the show today, A House in the Sky, was one of the books that we had up for discussion. And joining me in the studio right now is one of our members of our Idea Club, Kate Hockridge is here. And so what did you think? So you are one of the few people that I actually personally knew, but I didn't know you that well. I just knew you enough to know I want to get to know you a little bit better. And I threw this idea out to you, kind of just out in the wind. What'd you think? I was crazy?
I thought it was a great idea. I thought that, as you say, we're always waiting for things to happen. And this seemed like an opportunity to maybe make things happen and a chance, an avenue for discussion about all of the interesting things that happen in the world and how we might better ourselves, better our world, just learn more about the world and other people. And it's been a really great experience.
What I love about it, too, is that these women came together. It wasn't like a previous book club I had been in. We all knew each other's kids. And so, you know, we talk about the book for a few minutes, but that eventually it would, or sooner than eventually, it would all go back to discussing about each other's kids. Whereas this one, nobody knew each other. Nobody knew the background or anything.
Right. So that's right. And I think that was almost key to having kind of really interesting discussion. And yet, interestingly, often I would say intimate discussion, like really of what you really feel profoundly about, and people explaining sort of what their viewpoints were. And it was fascinating that people would share on a really deeper level than we often get to when we're just greeting people or just
it's like true. We got to know each other really quickly and very deeply, I think.
Yeah, I think the books.
What I also love about it is the books that we chose were like not typical books that you would read, right? Like
That's right. You picked
would be like, oh, I don't know if I'd ever pick that one. But then you read it, and even though you thought, well, I don't know about this, once you heard the discussion about it, it made you sometimes feel a little bit differently.
Absolutely. Like just such great discussion. And one question would feed off another. And having people from all different sort of walks of life
brought different perspectives, different life experiences. So really interesting. Yeah.
So my encouragement is, if there's something, if you think this sounds like a neat idea, or if you've had another idea, because I'm thinking if I would have sat around and waited for someone to invite me to an idea club, I'd still be sitting around waiting. But, you know, don't be afraid to put yourself out there and ask. If people say no, maybe they're just saying no to the timing, or, you know, but not necessarily you. You don't have to take it personally. Just throw that idea out there, and you never know who might end up in your living room. And pretty cool things can happen, and great learning can ensue. So back in a moment on Your Life Unlimited, we'll be speaking with the author of A House in the Sky. Welcome back to the show. It's Stephanie Staples, and I'm going to send a big shout out to TiberRiver.ca, 408 Academy, 1650 Keniston. Even their website smells great. I am pretty excited today to be talking to Amanda Lindhaus. She is the author of a book called A House in the Sky, which our Idea Club, as I mentioned in the first segment, read that all together. So it was really neat having, I think it was about 8 of us at that time, that had read the same book. And always interesting to hear people's takes on it. And it's interesting, I find, too, how you think one thing is really obvious about a statement or a and somebody else reads it and takes it from a different way. So, Amanda, give us a little bit, if people haven't read your book, tell us a little bit about your amazing story.
Hi, Stephanie. Well, A House in the Sky is a memoir. It's the story of my life. And so it takes people on a journey from my upbringing in Red Deer, Alberta, and then as a young woman, as I started traveling around the world, I was a fairly intrepid young woman, and with a backpack on, I went to over 50-some countries, crossing borders into places like Pakistan, and then later places like Iraq and Afghanistan, as I struggled to make a career for myself as a freelance journalist. And so it was in 2008 when I was 27 years old, and I was living in the Middle East, I was living in Baghdad, trying to make a career for myself as a freelance journalist, when I took what I thought was going to be a one-week work trip into Somalia. I went with an Australian colleague who was a photographer. And on our third day in the country, on the outskirts of the capital city, Mogadishu, our vehicle, as we were en route to an internally displaced people's camp, was ambushed by about a dozen teenage criminals. We were taken to an abandoned house. A ransom demand was made of, at that time, it was $1.5 million for each one of us, so $3 million, money that our family didn't have. So what unfolded during the next 460 days was a very brutal and often violent experience in captivity at the hands of these young jihadists. And my family on the other side of the world did everything that they could to raise the money needed to pay a ransom for my freedom, to bring me home. And in November of 2009, after spending 460 days as a hostage, after my family paid a ransom for me, I was released, thank God, and came back home, was reunited with my family. And so A House in the Sky is that story. And it's ultimately about how I survived while I was a hostage, not only in terms of like the actual strategies that I employed and used, but it's an exploration of what it is in the human mind and spirit that I think that allows somebody to survive something like that. I made some, I think, important and surprising discoveries about human resiliency in the midst of absolute darkness there, and I endeavored to share that in this book.
Absolutely. And I know I'm going to be the first one to admit, like, it was challenging for me when I'm always talking about positive, happy things, you know, like it was hard to read somebody else's tragedy. It was very difficult to read parts of the book, but that resiliency definitely shone through, and just in complete admiration and respect. You can't help but kind of try to imagine yourself in that situation. And the first thought is it would just be so easy to succumb to it.
Mm-hmm. People do say that to me a lot, and people almost seem to think that there's something unique about me that makes me particularly strong, that I did survive this. But I sort of reject that notion. I think that we are so much stronger than we think we are, and you don't know how strong you are until you're really tested. And I just had this terrible thing that happened, which was simultaneously, if we're trying to look at the bright side, an opportunity to go very deep inside of myself and really see what I was made of, because I had to, because my life was on the line.
I think you're right. I think no matter what people go through, you surprise yourself, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember being a young woman watching the Oprah Winfrey Show, big fan of Oprah, and seeing people's unbelievable stories and thinking, geez, if that happened to me, I just wouldn't survive. And then look what unfolded in my own life later, and I did survive.
So what do you think it was? What characteristics do you think you drew from your gut?
Well, I talk a lot about resiliency. So I think, like, we have this inside of us, and when crisis starts to unfold, you have to make a choice about what you nurture. You either nurture the fear and the anger and whatever other negative emotions are arising in you, and it's often very, very easy to do that, or you can choose to hold on to that resiliency that's inside of you and nurture that and make choices that are in line with that, which would include attempting and to choose forgiveness and trying to cultivate compassion inside of you. And it's just the choice that feels better. And when you're in a desperate situation like I was in, of course you always endeavor to the best feeling possibility. And in this case, just changing my thoughts felt so much better. It helped my survival to do that, to shift out of the negative thoughts, which were so toxic and were actually making me sick. I could feel it. And to shift into more positive feeling thoughts.
I love what you said, to make a choice about what you nurture.
Yeah,
that's pretty brilliant, because I think it's really easy to not choose and to just let the bad feelings, the bad circumstances overwhelm us.
Yeah, because what you nurture is what will grow.
Absolutely. So how did you, what led to the writing of the book? What made you decide to put this all on paper for all the world to read?
Well, interestingly, it was meeting my co-author, Sarah Corbett, because up until the point of meeting her, I didn't think that I wanted to write a book, and I had publishers contacting me and other writers wanting to work with me, and it wasn't interesting to me. But when I met Sarah, she came to Canmore to visit me from Maine, the United States, where she lives, and she said, I just see this story being bigger than 460 days in captivity. Amanda, you were living a very unusual life before you were kidnapped, mm-hmm. she said to me, and I think that would be of interest to people. You were a unique young woman in terms of what you were doing with your life. And I had never really thought about it like that, honestly, because it was just my life, you know. And I it made me excited to start thinking about, in the form of a book, exploring my earlier travels and really being able to explain to people the motivations behind what drew me to Somalia. Because obviously, there were a lot of criticism. What was I doing in Somalia to begin with? Was I really a journalist? These are all big questions that I wanted to answer. And so I thought a book in that form, which included the backstory, would hopefully answer those questions for people.
Yeah, I found the backstory just as interesting. I think, having that desire to do what you wanted to do and that pull to do it, and describe what your family thought about that and how that was for you. How did you rationalize the risk of going, or did you think it was a risk?
Well, I think in my 20s, like most people in their 20s, you feel sort of invincible. And because I had traveled so much, as I said, to over 50 countries, usually alone, and nothing really bad anyways, had ever happened to me, it's very easy to start to believe that it never will. And so it's not that I thought about risk all of the time. Honestly speaking, I didn't really. Certainly, obviously, I didn't think about it enough. And I think you do adapt to being in an environment. And so I had been living in Baghdad for 7 or 8 months before I went to Somalia. So I felt as comfortable as you could feel in a war zone. I mean, I was used to the sounds that you hear in war zones, etc. And so the trip to Somalia didn't seem like this huge stretch for me. I was a young woman who wanted to be a war correspondent. Somalia was, I mean, if maybe not the most obvious destination, also somewhere that made sense to go in many ways. And I did understand that it was a dangerous country to go to, but I obviously didn't prepare enough. And with the foolhardiness of youth, in a way, I just sort of ran into Somalia and ran right into trouble.
Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, more with Amanda Lindhout on Your Life Unlimited. It's Stephanie Staples with the Your Life Unlimited quick tip of the week. Do you ever wonder why some people seem to handle life's difficult situations so much easier than others? Well, they're more resilient, and things you can do to be a little bit more resilient is lead from your strength. If your strength is perseverance, use that. Don't give up. Be authentic. You can't thrive unless you're being true to yourself. You try to live somebody else's life just causes more stress and confusion. Resilient people reach out. They don't try and do everything by themselves. They invest time in building meaningful relationships and sometimes end those that are not too healthy. They're mindful. They have moment-to-moment awareness of how they are in their lives and being present as much as possible. And finally, they're positive. So, you know what? If you want to be a little bit more resilient, try those things this week. Welcome back to Your Life Unlimited. I'm sending a big shout out to the Fort Garry Hotel and yogapublic.com. They've got a $79 unlimited special for the month. You can have the mats and the towel and just a beautiful place. It doesn't even feel like work going there. So check them out, yogapublic.ca and the Hotel Fort Garry. I am in the studio with Amanda Lindhout. She is the author of A House in the Sky. It is her memoir of her tragic 460 days in captivity. But the tragedy, as we're lucky to hear, has a wonderful outcome. Amanda, you've been able to overcome incredible odds, and I think you must have some great insights to share about just forgiveness and resiliency and compassion and how you've been able to take some of the terrible things that have happened to you and turn them around and make the world a better place, actually, with your foundation support and such.
Well, forgiveness is what has helped me move forward more than anything else with my life, more than all the therapy I've had, more than anything. It's the choice, and it's a daily choice, to still, 5 years later, a daily choice for me to forgive, that just creates the space and the freedom in my life to move on from what happened to me. But forgiveness, it's a process. It's not something that just happens overnight, like you make the choice to forgive and then it's gone. So it's something that I really actively work on, and it's not always easy for me, actually. You know, there are, unfortunately, a lot of reminders to what happened to me around me in the world all the time, and so that anger comes up and I have to deal with it. But I think the important thing is to dedicate yourself to a practice of forgiveness, because some days I do get there and I feel like I really have forgiven and it feels so peaceful, and that to me is real freedom from my experience. And I've never felt that forgiving my captors is giving something to them. It's always been a gift that I'm giving to myself. And a part of my forgiveness work is what I call compassion in action. So I make the choice, like I do to forgive, to be compassionate on a daily basis. And part of that work for me was creating a nonprofit organization, as you mentioned, the Global Enrichment Foundation, which I did about 4.5 months after I was released from captivity. And it's an organization that works in Somalia, which works in the country where I was abducted. And we work mostly with women and children, providing educational opportunities for them. And we've done what I think is really good work over the last 4.5 years. We've had programs which have reached about 200,000 people inside of Somalia. We had a very large response to the 2011 famine in Somalia, so we were one of the first organizations on the ground to bring food to the people who were starving there. We gave out over 2 million meals in response to the famine in Somalia. So that's my compassion in action, and that's a commitment that I make every day to give back something to that part of the world, and it's been really important and very much tied to my choice to forgive.
I want to invite Kate Hockridge into the conversation. Now, she were part of the Idea Club when we read A House in the Sky, and you had a couple of interesting thoughts for Amanda.
Well, I guess, the book was really quite riveting, and there were parts of it that were difficult to even read. And maybe because, you know, I have a daughter close to your age, it's very, like, it brings the closeness of the experience that you know, to life for me. And so I certainly was happy that you were able to get out of that situation, and also that you've taken this, and now people are really, from what I've heard from people who've read your book or know about your foundation, that they're really pleased that they can help and be a part of something good that came out of something so horrible and difficult.
Absolutely. And even to have done that for a foundation after only 4 months of being
that's
out,
amazing.
That is amazing.
Totally amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
And, thank you so much, Kate.
You're welcome. And I just wanted to say, I was at a concert on Saturday night here. Jan Arden was singing, and she had a special tribute to you and a song that she had written called Unbroken. And I thought it was a very powerful song and certainly seemed to reflect what I had read about you in the book. So.
Yeah, Jan Arden is a friend of mine, and she wrote, it's called You Were Never Broken, and she wrote it after reading my book, A House in the Sky. She sat down at a piano and penned it, and then surprised me with it. And I was at her concert in Calgary, and if anybody has a chance to go and see her, she's so good in concert. And she closed the whole show with that song, and it was, my whole family was there, and it was such a beautiful moment to hear that, because I love to hear those words, you were never broken. It's true.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. So how did this change the relationship with your family, or did it? I can't imagine that it couldn't have changed it.
It really has changed my relationship with my family for the better. And that could have gone in a myriad of different ways, actually. You know, my family, my worst fear in captivity, you know, when I was feeling guilt-ridden, thinking, why did I decide to come to Somalia? What's my family going through? You know, I came out, my family was in debt because they had put everything they had into the ransom that was paid for me. And I had so much guilt. And my family, they're just this group of really loving, compassionate people who never once held it over my head and who were just said, we have you home, you know, everything else can be replaced, let's just move forward with our lives. And that is exactly what we've done. And our time together now has so much more value than it ever could have had this not happened. We, for those 15 and a half months, didn't know if we would ever see each other again. So now the fact that we can enjoy time together. My mom, she lives down the street from me, about 25 houses in the town of Canmore where I live, so she keeps a really close eye on me.
No doubt. We're going to take a break, but we're going to find out what you're up to now, where you're going, what's next for Amanda Lindhout, next on Your Life Unlimited. Welcome back. If you like what you're hearing, check out yourlifeunlimited.ca. Lots of information, coaching, speaking, and of course, Mo Mondays is always coming up soon in a city near you, momondays.com. And we're always trying to give you some ideas, insight, and inspiration. So you don't have to wait till Sunday mornings. You can get it anytime you want at yourlifeunlimited.ca. And a thanks to firstimpressionhairandskin.ca. They will keep you looking and feeling great. I am talking with the author of the book called A House in the Sky. It's not just a book, it's a memoir, and it is soon to be a movie. Amanda Lindhout, tell us about that. That's exciting.
Yeah, it is really exciting. When I came home from my experience in captivity, I was approached by different directors and producers, and I couldn't ever imagine turning this into something visual, even after I decided to work on a book. But I got a personal letter from actress Rooney Mara last fall. She had read the book, and she was writing to say, if you're ever thinking about making this into a movie, I would like to play you. And she went on to tell me about the charitable work she does in Africa. And she seemed like a really lovely girl. I reached out to her. We connected. And she was so passionate about the idea of playing young Amanda out in the world. And I wanted to work with Rooney. And I said, well, let's see what you can do. She went out to production companies and came back with Annapurna Pictures, which is the production company behind films like American Hustle and Zero Dark Thirty and films like that. So, you know, a very serious, reputable production company. And they optioned the book to film, and they're talking about production starting in 2015, with the film to be released sometime likely in 2016. And I'll be part of the process. I'm working on the film as a consultant, so I know that it's in good hands, and that's not to say it's always going to be easy, but I do feel excited about it.
Yeah, that's huge. And I'm sure, you know, you must have found writing the book a little bit therapeutic as well. Did you?
I absolutely found writing the book therapeutic. I think any therapist would say that when you go through that kind of trauma, writing it down is really healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Revealing it all to the world, on the other hand, publishing that writing is something that was a little different. I remember last fall when the book came out being quite challenged by it, like releasing this very personal mm-hmm. narrative out into the world. I just sort of held my breath, and you don't know how people will respond. And the really wonderful thing is that the majority of the Canadian public has responded really well, and I feel so lucky. I get messages from people who've finished the book all the time, just saying the nicest things, so supportive and encouraging to me.
People are good, right? For the most part, people are pretty amazing. But I mean, that's something, no matter, you know, you don't have to go to a trauma of this magnitude to be able to, you know, to write it down. Like, it doesn't have to be something that goes out to the world, but just the act of writing it down could be a great tool for anybody out there, you know, whatever level of sadness you've gone through or trauma, or just writing it down is a great tool in itself.
Absolutely.
So what else would you recommend to folks? What else helped you get through?
Well, I mean, I'm a really big fan of just regular sit-down talk therapy. I mean, I think there's so much value in seeking out a professional, somebody that you feel really comfortable with, and being able to talk out whatever is on your mind. And like you've just said, it could be really serious trauma, or it could be not so serious, but it's a healthy thing to do, and not talking to somebody who is close to you, or even a friend, but somebody who's totally impartial. I see a therapist still 5 years later, 3 times a week. And of course, I'm dealing with a lot of stuff, but I'm really committed to that. And I travel a lot, but no matter where I am in the world, I check in with my therapist over the phone. And I'm not ashamed of that either. You know, a lot of people need help.
No, that's super admirable. And I'm really happy to hear you talk about it and promote that, right? It's nothing to be ashamed of. In fact, I think you should be proud of that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. So what's coming up next? What are you excited about, and where are your travels taking you?
I just started university last week. So
congratulations.
Thank you. I'm a student now at the University of Calgary. I'm in the psychology department, and that's been a pretty fun experience. I'm in my second week now, and it's nice to be in Calgary. It's also interesting to see that after the book has been out in the world for a year, going to school isn't an entirely anonymous experience for me either. I'm surrounded by people in the class who have also read the book, which makes it an interesting learning experience for me.
Different from your last educational experience,
yeah.
No doubt, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But it's wonderful to see now you're traveling around, also speaking about your learnings and helping other people be more forgiving, be more compassionate. So, you know, it's just another example of how you can, you know, share your teachings with other people. So that's awesome. And I'm sure it takes a certain amount of courage to do that as well. But thank you for sharing.
Yes, I have been traveling all over the world, standing on stages in front of audiences, sharing my story that way too. And I find that really meaningful. I find that sort of intimate interaction with people, which it really is when you're standing on a stage and sharing your story with a room full of people, you know, it can be very powerful for the audience and also for me. And so it's something that I've done quite a lot of over the last year as the book has had the success that it's had. And it's something that I hope that I get the opportunity to keep doing.
I have to ask about Nigel's book just in a jiffy there. How did you feel about that one?
Well, I did read Nigel's book when it came out a couple of years ago. And, you know, I would say I don't love how I'm portrayed on every page, but I'm sure he would say that he doesn't love how he's portrayed either. You know, we're two individuals who had part of a common experience, and that's okay. You know, we don't have to be on the same page about everything.
What's your relationship like now?
I haven't talked to Nigel in years. And the truth is, we tried to keep in touch when we were released from captivity, but the experience had changed us both, and we did find it hard to connect, and that's really all I'll say about that.
That's good. That's good enough for me. Onward and upward.
Onward.
Thank you so much for sharing your story. Back in a moment on Your Life Unlimited. Thanks so much for listening. It's always my pleasure spending Sunday morning with you. I have been speaking with Amanda Lindhout. She is the author of the memoir, A House in the Sky, soon to be a movie. You can find the book on her website, amandalindhout.com, and it's a Heather's Pick at Indigo, so check that out. And Amanda, if there was just one thing you could let people know, what would that be?
I'd want to let people know that everybody has the power to make a significant difference in the world. And what I mean by that is I was once just a person with an idea to start the Global Enrichment Foundation and wanted to help some people. And over the last 4 years, I've watched this organization grow into something really significant. And it's, I hope, an example to people of, like, when you really believe in something and you want to do something good, when you want to be of service in the world, you can make that happen, and when you make that happen, it just changes your life and you forever for the better.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Great luck in the future. We'll look forward to following your travels. You've been listening to Your Life Unlimited on CGOB.